This is reel 3 of 6 reels. Simon Sobolev of Central.
But you were still in the Army when you went to Oregon State.
Yeah, then I graduated in 1930. You see, that from Oregon State University at that time.
But you re-enlisted in the Army.
Yeah, well, I did not re-enlist
you.
You stayed in 1930. I just was already with my friend staying, that he was soldier too. So he gave me the room to stay, and then I bought my ticket and come to Juneau.
But you graduated from Oregon State in
1930.
1930 in mineral engineering?
No, it's mining engineering.
And then you bought a ticket for?
Ticket for the Juneau. I want to go to Alaska. I didn't have to, because I offered a job for South America and Arizona and Nevada to be an engineer to begin with. But I thought, never mind that, because I want to show hard experiences in mining. So, and I went to the Juneau, there, a big mine over there, Alaska, big
Juneau gold mine.
AJ mine, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got even recommendation from them there too, yet. We took that. That's what I started Alaska, you see. And I come in by the boat, of course, from, from Seattle.
And what did you do at the AJ mine?
Mining, just a miner. Marketer miner, just common miner.
You didn't work as a mining engineer?
No, no. But they do. They said not only myself, some of the guys good bigger school. See, the Oregon State is what they call, I would consider what they call one of the outstanding mining school. Mm-hmm. But like Colorado School of Mines, Michigan School of Mines, and so on, big schools, you see.
Yes.
And if they come in, they do the same thing that I do. And a couple of brothers was of Washington University. The mining engineers, they're the ones who surveying and so on, like they're doing digital. There's so much saying. But Mr. Metzgard, he was a manager at that time.
Metzgard?
Yeah. So he's the one who told me that, that Ms. Sobolev said, you go to miner, and he said, later on, of course, we put you to in office to work.
But they wanted you to start out as a...
As a miner, just a mucker.
Mucker, and a miner.
Pick and show, like a workup.
And then after you had experience in the mine, you worked up to the engineering.
And later on, we were contracting the two, driving the... Later on, I talk about that's quite a dangerous mine there, you see.
Yes.
Yeah. It was 700 miners, you see. And you better begin with the mucking, pick and shovel, see. And later on, you have a powder. That's why I learned how to handle dynamite. Dynamite was to give the mine. He's a miner there. He used to go out and deal with mine. So I helped him to... make the dynamite stick and so on like that. Mm-hmm. Bring the steel and like that and help them along.
Mm-hmm.
Monkeys, that's the helper, you see?
Yeah.
And later on, they give you more. Later on, they give the machines yourself to drill. That's quite an honor already, you see? And something like that. And later on, I was working pretty good, all kind of work there, you see? In the mine, they broke in very good. They give me the, what they call, guy. The contract point, not me, but other guy. I was his helper, contractor, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me pay more money. We got so much per foot to drive this and that.
Well, when you first went to work at AJ Mine, how much did you make an hour?
I think we had, if I'm not mistaken, we were making at that time either $5 or $6 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was in 1930?
1930. $5 or $6 a day, if I'm not mistaken. But later on, with contract, we make $7 a day, whatever it is. A little more, bonuses, yeah.
I was talking to Pat Oakes, who lives here, and she said her father used to work at AJ
Mine. Sure, that's right, see? Mm-hmm. And Riando, what's his name, that Bison, he knows Riando too.
Mm-hmm.
He was a mine foreman, nice man.
Riando. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that time was Father Koshovarov, in general, Russian father. He was a well-known man, see? And he was in charge museum of the journal there too. He got lectures there, two kids come in and see the museum, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He's very famous. Well, Governor Parker that time in journal.
Governor Parker.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
And we Russians there that they get together, some lefties and some righties, just like when in Russia.
Were there many Russians in Juneau?
Quite a few. There was a Bolsheviki that we come white, because was also white, also like myself.
There were some Bolsheviks?
Oh, yeah, but we fought on the streets.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. In general there, you see.
Were there some Russians who were descendants of the early Russians who came to Alaska?
Yeah, well, some of that's two and that don't know nothing, just ignorant. Ignoramus Russian.
Ignoramus Russian.
Yeah, that's all. But all they know that they don't know schooling. They cannot read or write either. In Fairbanks, I had some guy that come. I write a letter for them. You see?
Is that right?
Yeah. To go to that the shore. So nice. They're nice Russian. They are nice people, but they don't know anything.
They have no education.
No schooling. I remember that in Fairbanks when I was 19, I came in 1931 to Fairbanks later on. And there was some joint was there, some Caucasian, Russian, arguing among themselves and causing the fight. You know, that a big Russian teacher and officer in Russia. I can yell at them, I said, you stop that Russian language. How the heck you expect America to respect you like that, like you nothing but a savages?
Mm-hmm.
And they stop right away. You don't need the policemen to stop.
They stopped their fighting.
Yeah, stop them easy.
Do you have some Russian friends in Fairbanks now?
Well, not anymore. I don't know. I had used to know quite a few of the Russian mm-hmm. friends now. Not anymore. I don't. Well, used to be Anton Sukhoi, very nice. He used to go to the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. Member of the Episcopal Church,
mm-hmm.
And he is now in Portland. Mm-hmm. He was typical Russian who come from that get away from the during Truman administration from Russia. His wife, Russian Fekla, big woman. She used to work in the drugstore at the washing dishes over there,
mm-hmm.
big one. See, and Anton talking about. They invite me lots of time for dinner. See, he make a big bread like that and. You can eat, they can eat, you know, they love to eat, Russian style. They got icons over there and got the crosses and everything like that. Oh, we're religious, you see, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Russian crosses, something like that. And on the neck and everything else.
Well, did you ever belong to any church denomination?
In Fairbanks, I used to go to the Episcopal Church quite often because mm-hmm. I watched his father. Father was the minister. Warren was his name.
Father Warren?
Well, yes. He was a pretty good, I like him. He's a very, very intelligent person. Now, sometime I go to Catholic Church. Now, sometime I go to Bioteg. I don't know any kind of particular church.
Did you ever go to church when you were in Russia? Were you brought up with a religion?
Oh my gosh, yes. I was even in confession when I was 16 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
We were religious people. Russian, they're religious people.
It was Russian Orthodox?
Russian Orthodox. And don't you let you what they call let you let believe anybody that they are not church is completely out of Russia. They still people they go out to bike across themselves to church and pray to God.
Mm-hmm. Even though they're not allowed buildings.
But they still the same. They never can eradicate the religious feeling.
Right.
Never can. You see, that's what the trouble that the comma is. What's the teaching that Marxism, communism, what is it, that religion? Ideas that teach, that who are they to impose on us ideas like that?
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like it, okay, they can have it, but don't try to impose on us.
Yeah.
Just like a religion. I have visited many Chinese Buddhist temples, Confucius temple, when I was in China, Manchuria, and also in China itself. I mean, I met Russian, Mongolian priests and so on like that. They same belief we do. They believe in God. They believe in God. Of course, Christianity, the world, we got it from them most of the time. The Buddha, that's one of the greatest teachers you ever see. Now, so I don't, what they call, condemn no religion, because all they believe in God. This simple religion get improved just like this one, people. See, over there, they got religion very simple. In Oregon State, I took, in the meantime, summertime, evolution and eugenic.
Evolution?
And eugenic. And also orientation in religious thinking. That guy was a doctor, Presbyterian church minister.
Where did you take that course?
In summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime. So vocabulary, more or less, and general education. I took lots of educational subjects besides that engineering, you see. Lots of mathematics, of course, chemistry that require physics and all kind of engineering subjects, you see. But I took lots of literature and so on like that, you see.
That was for your, when you were taking your mining engineering?
Yes, that's right. Oh, yes, yes.
Well,
yes.
Did you go to the University of Alaska, too?
Oh, yes. I got to call University of Alaska there, too. See? Yeah.
Yeah.
I took some, of course, I was, took spy, German was in Russian school. I took some German in Oregon State. And, of course, I took Spanish here in University of Alaska. There was Spanish teacher was there. Remember her? Spanish teacher, she died.
don't remember
that
who
one.
That would
yeah,
be.
Well, she died, you see. Yeah. So that, see, I love to study languages, you
yes.
see. And so that, yes, I studied that quite. Well, these are orientation religious thinking, very interesting subject, because that guy, he preaches, talk about that, how the religion originated. Well, I know from my beginning to the end myself, without even taking the course. Because primitive people have primitive religion, very simple one.
Mm-hmm.
Pray to God, pray to tree, pray to big animal, pray whatever they are. When they start to mentality increasing, religion get more.
Get more complex.
More complex. We come to the Christianity now. Now the Christianity we doubt very much too, you see.
Yes.
Because I don't go to church. I go to over there that Lutheran church where I am in Gig Harbor. I like that, pretty nice. So I go over there quite often. And I enjoy it because I believe in God. I am not atheist by no means. But I strong belief in supreme power. Any who denies that power, he is he is just nothing, himself.
Mm-hmm.
He don't know very much because he think he knows at all, but what the hell we are? Or like little ants crawling on the surface of
yeah.
the earth here and all know all about it?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
When you study lots of geology, historical geology, paleontology, fossils, all like that,
mm-hmm.
and how the earth originated, we studied all that stuff.
I think you studied all your life.
I love to study all of my life. I do. You do. I did today too. See.
Well, when you came to Fairbanks, did you in 1931? Did
yeah.
you come to Fairbanks to go to the university?
Well, no. I come to Colorado to learn water mining. But I met Patty, Dr. Patty. He was
mm-hmm.
that time the dean of School of Mines. See.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked and said, "Why don't we go ahead and study?" I didn't even expect to get any water degree. They give it a degree if I wanted to, but just before I. Graduation about months before, in April, I guess. I went to work for his party on the Eva Creek Gold Mining Company, close to the ferry there.
He went to work for Patty.
Patty, he got over the mine,
yes.
underground, you see. So I worked for him, you see. Was there.
Mm-hmm.
But here, now, I was postgraduate student. And I helped lots of those others. I was in the laboratory making some standard solution. And then it's like that, many one of those. But I give them help all the time. And then my Patty and I went out survey, like Larry Hill, who surveyed all underground work and geological fishing and so on like that. Patty was a pretty good friend. I saw Mrs. Patty.
Mm-hmm.
He saw her boys. I know all of his boys.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to my mine, Coal Creek here, but one of the, he met, he asked, I got a telegram from him not to hear some place. He came in to want to, he worked with dredging engineering there. We surveying we over there, that's what
mm-hmm.
it be. But I didn't go, you see. I go work around this place, you see. And I sometime all like that, you see. So I took that. Miss Patty, she was very nice, over to me. They always had the home. I have been many times at home, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Invite me for dinner and so on. But Ernest, of course, Ernest had father, son. He got killed here one time. Maybe you heard about it.
Who's that?
Oldest son.
Oldest son.
Yeah. He was a flyer during the war, the latest war here in the Pacific. But he came here from flying from Coal Creek to Fairbanks, right not too far away from here.
Run what happened
here,
to his
into
plane?
Hills. Well, the weather was bad.
The weather was
yeah.
bad. Mm-hmm.
He was killed not only your other guys, he killed too. I knew the guy too, you see. Yeah,
mm.
she, and women.
I remember that now.
Yeah. And other one, the Stan. He's a Stan, that Stan guy. He's now for a while in Alaska here, and he's a very good writer and writes sometimes one in Alaska magazine.
Yes, he writes for the Seattle
yeah. I knew
Times.
Him. Once he was a little guy like that.
Yeah.
And once he see me, hello, simple Simon, met the pilot go to fair, and that's what...
Is that what he used
yeah,
to
that's
say?
Yeah, and he's talkative, you know. I said, Miss Patty said, you stop that call, Simon, simple Simon. Well, I said, oh, that's Mr. Patch. I said, makes a difference. He does bother me. But Roland, he was not Graf Roland, he was Matadon Swar, he was a very good friend of mine, Roland, you see. Of course, I was Carl, and he was a very good friend of mine, but my body, you see. He died not long time ago.
Who's that?
Scarland. Ivor.
Oh, Ivor Scarland.
Yeah, he was very good, you see.
Yes.
Well, so that, I said, never mind, but somebody told me that his town don't like to call him what the devil they call him there? I don't like to call him. He was a short name that he don't like to be called. A pigtail or something like that, I don't know, something like that, you see. All I said to you was just like that. That's all that. No, don't call me like that. Well, you call me Simple Simon, do you? Yeah. We got that.
So that ended that.
Yeah, that's the end of it, you see. Yeah. But I intend to see Stan in Seattle. Maybe I see him sometime too. He's in Seattle writing that newspaper there, you see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seattle Times.
Seattle Times. I got to see him sometime. See.
Yeah, you
I haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah.
He and I will have a good time to talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But of course, Patty, he is what? Patty is alive yet. Is he remarried?
He's in Seattle.
Seattle, yeah. I have been in his home in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I suppose in the same place now.
I think so, but I'm not sure.
And
you went to work for Patty. Did you work for him for a long time? Or
well,
just one season?
Maybe just a month and a half. They didn't have money to pay. And Dean Patty, he's all right. I'm not against him. But he's some kind of promoter, pretty better one too. You see, mm-hmm. Sometimes he's not telling the truth. So I caught him that time, and he was in my place several times, he and Patty, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But he got a bad business on that Eva Creek mixed up there, because he got a big mill to put up, it cost maybe $250,000, you see, but he did not evaluate the right way to ground, you see. He assumed too much, which is not.
He didn't prospect the ground enough.
Well, that's right, not prospect, not enough to what they call evaluate. I got evaluation here all myself. That was one of my projects to evaluate, and I evaluated myself, and he made an awful mess out of that.
So then, did you go to work for somebody else, or?
Yeah, I work many parts. I work prospect in Eva Creek, I mean, Chester Creek later on, and I was working later on, I work here. Yeah.
You worked on the Berry Dredge?
Oh, yes, I worked for several years on the Berry Dredge, Eagle Creek, where the Weisland is, I worked there.
Yeah.
There, 3 seasons.
Well, did you know this Clarence Berry?
Not Clarence Berry, not Berry. He's a guy who was donated to University of Alaska Museum.
It was Berry who built the dredge.
Yeah, very well. Very
but
good.
When you worked on it, someone else owned it.
Berry dredge owned that, you see. Yeah, but
they still owned it.
You know, yes, he's the one that owns that, not any other. He's the one that was Berry Dredge Company. That's what I work, you see. But the manager was one of those. You see, they're Danish people.
Mm-hmm.
And they've hired all the Danish too. Danish manager was Chris Christensen from Washington. He was the one that put a big shot over there, whatever it is. And so I work on Maston Creek for Berry. I work
Mastodon
on
Creek.
Eagle Creek. At Berry outfit. And here, of course, the dredging outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, I work about Maston Mining Company. That was in Maston Creek, too. We had a big outfit. That was Joe Corson Flyer was used to be in the fishing.
Joe Corson.
Yeah, he was part of our owner. Then he won also mine that Gustafsson, Clary Hill mine. He mm-hmm. was a part of that. Archie Laird is the one. But Archie Laird. Yeah, he's in Fairbanks. But he's poor guy that, he's very nice, honest guy, very hardworking man. We did the telephone line from Eagle to here. Archie Laird put up the tripod. There was a telephone line around here.
To Eagle Creek?
Eagle Creek from here, all around. This all this road to Soka has been way up to Deadwood Creek, Eagle Creek all around.
Mm-hmm.
You see, line was stretched out from... And from Circle to way out of here.
I see.
Fish Creek all around, the telephone is like that, you see.
I see you have a telephone on your wall in there.
Yeah, that's the one that left, you see.
When was that telephone system installed?
Oh, that was a long time. That was when I was come here, that was 1933, 34, maybe until 1940, like that.
Was it here when you came?
No, that's no telephone. This was we didn't have any telephone.
It was installed then after you came here.
Oh, yeah, well, it's not installed. It's just like we found all the telephone here, put it here, you see. But the telephone was in the roadhouse here. When the roadhouse, you see that over there, that when Patos lived?
Yes.
Big roadhouse over there?
Yeah.
Used to be big roadhouse over there. R. R. Erickson, he was in charge.
Art Erickson?
Riley Erickson. Nice guy. He's one of the best guys I've ever seen. What happened? 71.
I'm going to read a column that appeared in the Tacoma Tribune in 1971. It was written by Rod Cardwell, staff writer. It's kind of a feature story on Simon Sobolev. Probably the best thing that ever happened to him was the revolution that put the Reds on top in his native Russia. He fought on the losing side, period. Found refuge in America, married one of Alaska's finest cooks, and leads a life his Russian relatives wouldn't believe. Simon Sobolev had us over to his winter home across the Narrows. A new green rambler in the lovely woods near Wallachet Bay? You pronounce that Wallachet Bay?
Wallachet Bay.
Wallachet Bay.
Yeah.
And he said he walks 4 or 5 miles a day to keep in shape. He has a flat stomach, not much height, but a wiry build, and wears his gray hair in a youthful crew cut. His thick accent is misleading. He is impressively articulate and has an American college degree. At 75, Sobolev still tramps around Alaska, his official residency. He was a gold miner and a road builder all over the far north, and he keeps a summer cabin 130 miles above Fairbanks. Simon has come a long way from his peasant boyhood under the Tsar. Once, not so long after he reached the United States, he says, he got down on his knees and thanked God he was in this country. Simon describes his birthplace as, quote, primitive village close to the Ural Mountains in the north part of Russia, unquote. It is hard telling where he would be today if he hadn't been such a good student in grammar school. The village doctor took an interest in him and paid his way through high school. Simon became a teacher. Then Russia got involved in World War I against Germany and Austria. He was drafted but didn't have to stay a buck private. With his education, he qualified for training as an officer. And he fought in the Balkans as a second lieutenant until the people at home revolted over terrible military losses. The Tsar was toppled. Simon saw Moscow in complete anarchy. New leaders restored order briefly before the Reds, (Bolshevik) swept into power. Sobolev joined the White Army of former Tsarist officers, and they battled the Reds in Siberia for 3 years and lost. As an exile, he was in Mongolia and the Gobi Desert and Shanghai. There, in 1923, the American consulate granted him a visa to enter the United States. Arriving in Seattle, Simon and a companion filled their pockets with rocks, just in case there were any Reds to fight. They were amazed they could go about in peace. Sobolev tried his hand at logging but didn't care for it, and enlisted in the U.S. Army at Fort Lewis. He is proud to have been recognized as, quote, excellent soldier with excellent character, end quote. The ex-Russian officer earned the stripe of private first class in 6 months. Simon became a naturalized citizen in 1927. He served a pair of 3-year hitches in the Army, and his great triumph was getting assigned to Oregon State College as a military instructor and being allowed to attend classes. He earned a Bachelor of Science degree in mining engineering, and he also picked up a reserve commission as a second lieutenant. Civilian Sobolev left Oregon for Alaska in 1930 and went into placer mining for himself and various companies. I never made a fortune, but I made a living, he says, and I lived off the land. A young man can still do it if he's not one of those hippies who just want to sit around. Simon also found time for postgraduate study at the University of Alaska. He worked on construction of the Alaska Highway and helped build World War II airfields where Russian flyers stopped en route home with American planes. They thought I was a spy, he recalls. His wife, Eva, 74, was a mine cook when they met. Eva's cooking skills were widely celebrated, and miners never forgave him for stealing her away. Sobolev is retired from the U.S. Bureau of Public Roads, having served as a highway engineer in the Fairbanks District. He can tell fascinating stories of his snowshoe tricks. Violent radicals disturb and frighten him. He believes they abuse freedoms of speech and assembly. Change is good, Simon says, but it should be made the American way, not the Moscow way. He exchanges letters with a nephew in Russia, a chauffeur for some commissar. And when Sobolev sent him a picture of his car, the nephew replied, "Uncle, you must be a chauffeur, too." Simon wrote back that everybody in this country is his own chauffeur, and many families have 3 cars. He says he knows he wasn't believed.